In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Two officers are walking.
Why, she expects me to read her mind, for crying out loud.
Well, you're supposed to do without her having to ask. You know, it shows you're considerate or something.
Shows you're psychic. And by some miracle, I figure out what she wants. 2 seconds later, she changes her mind. Take last night. Where do we eat? She says, you choose, I don't care. So I say Patsy's. And suddenly she does care and says any place but Patsy's. Am I boring you?
That guy.
He points to a dark-haired man.
What about?
The weenie waver Sarge was talking about likes to flash the old Chinese ladies while they're doing that morning Tai Chi Jackie Chan.
Could be. Hey, pal. Talk to you?
Hey. You! Stop! Police! Stop! Get back here!
The man runs and the officers chase him.
Police! Stop! Hey! Get back here!
He climbs a fence, but an officer grabs him.
Oh, what's the matter with you? Why'd you run, Dirkall, huh?
Chasing me,
stay there!
CPOP to Central. We have an apparent DOA in Roosevelt Park.
I tackled him, Richie, not killed him.
Not him, look.
A man's body is on the ground. Dried streaks of blood cover his face. Later...
White male, mid-20s. Looks like he was homeless.
Sure he's not just sleeping it off?
Nobody smells this bad. I don't care how many showers they miss. Found these in his pockets, a lock, a key, and some loose change.
Thanks.
Eddie gets out of a car.
What are you burning, the midnight oil?
Man, I was catching up on my DD5s. I ain't get home till almost 2 in the morning. Plus, I think I'm coming down with whatever's going around.
This is Mal Chiodi. So what do we owe the pleasure?
Facial contusions, broken bones, 2 days worth of decomp. Factor in the cold weather, I say he's been dead a week.
How you get a week?
Bugs don't lie. Don't know how. Check it out. Maggots, pupa, beetles... Who's on the buffet line when gives you approximate time of death? Plus, fluid seepage.
Yeah, we get the picture. There's no way he's been lying here a week without somebody noticing.
He was on ice somewhere.
So that means the body was dumped here either late last night or early this morning.
Damn, he took a beating.
Of the vehicular variety. Safety glass, like from a windshield, and paint flakes. And he's got fib breaks in both legs.
Bumper fractures.
And you thought you were feeling run down.
Eddie wipes his nose with a tissue as he looks down at the body. The New York City skyline is lit up at night. Police officers work the city streets. The word law moves in front of a squad car, and a man is led away in handcuffs. Detective Lenny Briscoe is wearing his tie loosened around his open shirt collar. Detective Eddie Green is on the phone at his desk, and Lieutenant Anita Van Buren is shown. The word order appears in front of a courthouse, and a U.S. flag waves. Scenes from a courtroom are shown. Executive Assistant DA Jack McCoy is leaning on his desk. Assistant DA Serena Sutherland is also at a desk, and DA Arthur Branch is in an office. Law and order. The detectives and the assistant DAs walk down a hallway together. At the precinct, Lieutenant Van Buren is pouring herself a cup of coffee.
It's definitely a hit and run. CSU confirmed that the glass and the paint are from a car.
Beck's working on both. I've never seen him happier.
You know what would make me happy? A name to go with our victim.
What, John Doe doesn't do it for you?
You ran as Prince through BCI?
First thing we did. No soap.
So no ID on the Vic, no lead on the car, no witnesses.
Well, they can't all be gimmies.
The Vic had 26 cents and a key from one of those coin-operated lockers.
He was homeless, but he had a locker.
It's a safe place to keep his stuff. It's better than a shopping cart.
After 9/11, how many public lockers are left in this city? I mean, Port Authority, Penn Station, Grand Central took them all out.
What about a gym, a place to shower and change?
He didn't do either. I doubt if he had a membership to the New York Health and Racket Club.
How about the YMCA? There are what, 6 in Manhattan? Start with those.
The detectives enter a locker room at a YMCA.
You feeling lucky?
Yeah, I was the first 3 or 4 places. Now I'm starting to feel like one of the village people.
Eddie tries the key in several locked lockers. One opens.
Next, we should buy a lottery ticket.
You gotta have faith.
Yeah, especially if you're a Knicks fan.
Pocket knife, wallet.
He searches the wallet.
Nope, no license.
Why am I not surprised?
Family snaps, maybe. Yeah, I guess this is him. He must have aged 30 years on the street.
Lenny opens a book.
For Alan, happy birthday. Hope you like this as much as I do. Love, Gina.
We don't know that book is his. He could have picked it up somewhere.
Somebody had a doctor's appointment. 2 years ago last March.
I wonder if they kept it.
Apartment of Gina Fisher. A woman looks at the pictures found in the wallet.
2 years I've been waiting for this knock on the door.
She turns to a young girl who's coloring a picture.
That looks nice, honey. You just have to talk to these men for a minute.
She kisses the girl's forehead as the girl nods. The three step away.
How'd you find me?
We talked to Alan, the psychiatrist.
He told us that your brother was a schizophrenic.
It started manifesting his first year of college. Voices, hallucinations. He had what they called suicidal ideation. Talked about killing himself. If he took his meds, he could function, but...
He stopped taking them?
They made him numb. Our father had stomach cancer. We had to sit here and watch him die in stages. Alan said he couldn't feel anything. Said he wanted to be able to mourn Daddy's death. Feel something when he said goodbye.
Gina shrugs.
After the funeral, we all went home to sit Shiva. Alan never showed up. Next day, I filed a missing persons report. Nothing happened. So I started looking for him myself.
Did you ever find him?
I saw him once, a few months ago, Tompkins Square Park. My little brother looking like someone I would normally cross the street to avoid. I couldn't get him to come home. He was so far gone, I'm not even sure he recognized me.
At the park with a photo.
His name is Alan Fisher, you know him?
What happened to him?
He got hit by a car.
Well, why didn't you say so? I got my BMW parked right over here.
Man, that ain't funny.
Sorry. You okay?
He died.
Oh.
I know this guy.
A red-haired woman stares at the picture.
Got in my face a couple times at the mission.
Got in your face?
Yelling about this and that, spitting and screaming. Scary dude.
When's the last time you saw him?
I don't know, a couple weeks ago maybe.
All right, thanks. Hope that's good news.
It's Beck. He's got a line on the car.
With Beck.
The paint's a shade of green, Pentland green specifically, but I couldn't match it to an assembly line model.
Must be a custom job.
How about the glass?
Garden variety automotive, not unique to manufacturer.
Oh, thanks for bringing us all the way down here. It was a lovely trip.
Oh, let me finish. Now, the high-end automakers use lasers to microscopically etch the VIN number on the windshield.
How cool is that?
Yeah, now this is just a partial, but it's enough for the DMV to ID the car that it came from as an Aston Martin V12 Vanquish.
An Aston Martin who?
Vanquish, man. James Bond's car. You know, in the last one died another day?
Sorry, I haven't seen a Bond movie since Sean Connery hung up his rug.
So if James Bond lived in New York and wanted to buy a Vanquish, where would he go?
Later, the detectives are at a car dealership.
The V12 retails for $236,000 plus options.
More than my last house.
But that includes delivery to your door. And you get to pick your color. Just bring us a chip and we'll match it.
So it's a custom paint job.
No two alike.
It's a must buy. You got an installment plan? My great-grandchildren can pay it off.
Yeah, that and the national debt. At a price like that, you can't sell that many.
We're targeting a select clientele.
You want to give me a number?
This model year, roughly 50 in the tri-state area, 10 to 12 in Manhattan.
I don't suppose one of them was in Pentland Green.
Salter Publicity. The detectives talk to a long-haired woman.
Quarter of a mil's a little extravagant, I know, but trust me, image-wise, it's a bargain.
And how much does image go for these days?
My time bill's out at $500 an hour.
Damn, you must be one hell of a publicist.
Publicity is just what's on the letterhead, but you know what I'm really selling.
Image?
That's why you guys are the detectives.
Speaking of which...
I certainly haven't been in an accident. Do you have any idea how much I pay for a collision? Believe me, I get the teeniest little door ding and I wear black for a week.
Well, then I guess you won't mind us taking a look at your car.
Be my guest.
She gets her car keys.
Parking level 3. Don't forget to lock it up.
In the parking garage.
Mama, I'm home.
Looks in pretty good shape. Hurting a car is fine. That should be a felony.
Eddie sits in the passenger seat.
Want to take a push pin?
Yeah, I can just see the headline. Cops take $200,000 joyride.
Eddie checks the glove box.
I got a home address, Bank Street. That's not so far from where the body was dumped.
Well, it's not so close either. There's not a scratch on this puppy.
So how many body shops do you think are authorized to repair this puppy?
JD Precision Auto Body.
Actually, we're the only certified Aston Martin body shop in the entire Northeast.
And the only one with a Blackhawk Quark body alignment system.
Don't leave home without it.
Yeah, mock all you like. Sure beats entrusting your most prized possession to a couple of neighborhood knuckleheads with a ball-peen hammer.
True, no question. So this Blackhawk Quark gizmo, did you use one on a Vanquish owned by a Carrie Salter?
Carrie Salter? Sure. Yeah, she hit a deer. Up in Connecticut, we replaced the windshield, pounded out the hood, repainted the whole thing.
Soon after, Carrie arrives in her car and a garage door opens.
Oh, that's convenient.
Hey, it's open. I'm going in.
Detective? Was there something else?
Well, there's a few somethings, actually.
Thought we covered everything.
Well, why don't we talk about it down at the precinct?
Hey, Lenny!
Eddie points to spots on the garage floor.
That ain't motor oil.
Well. A garage in mid-November.
It must be, what, about 45 degrees up in here?
A natural refrigerator.
What the hell is going on?
We'll talk about it downtown.
What about my car?
I'm going to call a tow truck. They're going to take it to impound.
Impound? A tow truck?
Oh, don't worry. He slows down for deer.
Later in interrogation.
I was turning on to my street. Okay, don't I have the right not to worry about some drunken bum stumbling in front of my car, scaring me half to death?
Oh, yeah. How dare they wander into your neighborhood?
With a furrowed brow, Carrie stands and peers out a window for a moment.
It was an accident. It was late, and he just stepped out right in front of me. He just came out of nowhere, and I hit the brake, but he just flew into my windshield, and he was just hanging there, like, half in and half out, and I panicked, so I just turned the car into the garage.
And I don't suppose calling an ambulance for the poor bastard ever crossed your mind.
It wasn't like that.
Was he still alive when you pulled in?
He was moaning, and I went inside for a few minutes to calm down because I was so scared, and I sat there trying to figure out what to do. And I could hear him calling for help.
Lenny stands and glares at her.
You heard him calling for help?
Yeah. And when I went back to check on him, oh, God. He was dead.
An officer opens the door, and a man in a suit enters the room.
Gary, stop talking right now. Sanford Rems, Ms. Salter's lawyer.
Oh, what a shame. If you'd have come in 30 seconds earlier, you could have heard your client's confession.
Then I have my work cut out for me, don't I? In the meantime, I want Ms. Salter processed through central booking immediately. On the way, you don't say one word to her. You don't even ask her what her favorite color is.
Well, we already know. Pentland Green.
Later, Carrie and Menz are with Jack and Serena.
It was dark. It was late. She was tired. She didn't expect some deranged vagrant who, by the way, had a well-documented history of suicidal tendencies to jump out in front of her car.
And I'm sure the four apple martinis she drank that evening had no effect on her expectations.
Fine. Suspend her license, she does some community service, and you get to go back to prosecuting real criminals.
Like people who commit vehicular homicide, tamper with evidence.
And let their fatally wounded victims die a slow death in the garage while they sit in their living room and have another drink.
See, this is what I was afraid of. You're twisting an unfortunate accident into an act of cold-blooded murder.
Leaving a man to suffer and die is cold-blooded, Sandy.
No question. But did he suffer? I really don't know. And neither do you, because there hasn't been an autopsy. But let's rectify that, shall we? My motion to disinter Mr. Fisher's corpse.
You want the body?
Well, it'd certainly be difficult for my expert to conduct an independent autopsy without it.
Carrie's lawyer smiles. Chambers of Judge Elizabeth Meisner. Jack, Serena, and Rems are with the judge.
This was a car accident, not a suspicious death. Moreover, the family's Jewish. They're observant. They don't want an autopsy.
And when necessary, religious doctrine should be trumped by the law.
Bringing me to my next point, there's no precedent allowing a defendant to conduct her own autopsy of the victim.
Maybe not, but there's no precedent prohibiting it either. On the contrary, I submit an independent autopsy is perfectly acceptable pretrial discovery.
When the evidence is arguably relevant, you seem to forget that your client confessed.
And you're looking to paint her as an uncaring, callous bitch who allowed this poor soul to suffer.
Well, that sounds like a pretty accurate portrait to me.
Just what I'm talking about. And to rebut this, I need the opportunity to conduct an independent autopsy.
You have the medical examiner's report.
And the medical examiner is employed by the city. I'm sorry, when I said independent autopsy, was I being too oblique?
Has your ME finished her examination?
That's the point. She's not my ME.
But she's done with the body, right? Then I don't see the prejudice to the people by allowing the defendant access to the victim. Defense motion granted.
With D.A. Arthur Branch.
You gotta admit, it's a brand new spin on the time-honored defense strategy of beating up on the victim.
Rams had a very compelling argument. He's a good lawyer, Jack.
The best that money can buy.
Poor victim, rich defendant. Well, Lady Justice may be blind, but nobody ever said the old broad was fair.
He answers his phone.
Branch. When? Thanks. Well, that expert must have found something, because Rams is moving to dismiss. Judge has scheduled an evidentiary hearing for 10 in the morning.
Jack and Serena stare with their mouths open. Supreme Court evidentiary hearing.
I began by pickling the deceased's brain in a formalin solution. This was done to harden the brain, like boiling an egg, so it could be dissected.
And when you dissected it, what did you find?
A subdural hematoma. The decedent had bled into his brain from the sagittal sinus.
What happens when one incurs a subdural hematoma?
Blood slowly seeps into the brain, eventually killing the subject. It can take hours, even days. Often the victim doesn't even know he's dying.
He wouldn't feel sick enough to get medical attention?
Might feel woozy, sleepy, nauseous, unwell. To a homeless person like Mr. Fisher, who's probably already in poor health, possibly intoxicated, this would be a familiar feeling.
Fair enough. But Mr. Fisher was struck at 2 a.m. and dead by 3. Isn't it reasonable to assume, as the medical examiner has, that this accident caused Mr. Fisher's hematoma?
Reasonable, but in this case, mistaken. May I?
Your Honor, if I may. Defense exhibits A and B.
He takes 2 vials to the witness stand.
Given the size of the ruptured vessel, an hour between trauma and death would have produced bleeding in the brain of at most 10 cc's of blood. Approximately this much fluid. However, I siphoned 5 times that amount from the decedent's brain. 50 cc's. There's simply no way this much bleeding could have occurred in only an hour.
So what you're saying is...
Miss Salter hit someone with her car who was already fatally injured.
Men's nods.
Well, if the car crash didn't kill him, what did?
Judging by the 3 contrecoup injuries he sustained to the back of his brain, he was beaten.
Jack leans over to Serena.
I want to see Rogers in my office.
Damn. That doesn't sound very encouraging.
It's not meant to be. Now I wish I'd insisted on an autopsy.
Sounds even less encouraging.
Well, the family didn't want one, and I wasn't about to waste the city's time and money on...
On a homeless person?
On someone who obviously died from head trauma. Which I assumed he sustained when he was struck by Carrie Salter's car.
So what's your expert opinion?
I'm afraid I have to agree with Geller. The car didn't kill him.
In the judge's chambers.
It doesn't matter. Doctrine of intervening causation. A man leaps off a building, gets hit by a bullet on the way down. It's homicide, not suicide.
Except in this case, it wasn't the bullet that killed him. The car accident didn't cause the hematoma. Hell, it didn't even exacerbate it.
Expert testimony is for a jury to evaluate.
Except I can't let it go to a jury on these facts. Come on, Jack, give me something to work with.
The defendant left this man in her garage to die. If she'd gotten him medical attention, the doctors might have detected the hematoma, stopped the bleeding, and saved his life.
I counted at least 3 maybes in there. My client is prepared to plead out on tampering, obstruction, failing to report an accident, the crime she actually committed.
What do you have in mind?
First offense, I think probation's warranted.
3 years plus community service.
Your Honor.
I'm sympathetic, Miss Sutherland, but as much as I'd like to, I can't order jail time. The criminally negligent homicide charge is dismissed. I'm accepting the defendant's pleas on obstruction and tampering. Mr. Rams, have your client see probation, and she's free to go.
Jack frowns and lowers his head. Outside the precinct.
Dead man walking, just when you thought you'd seen everything.
You still have a victim in search of a suspect.
Salter's expert give us anything new to go on?
He says someone beat Fisher up about 7 hours before Salter struck him with her car.
So 2 a.m. Which would mean he took a beating around 7 o'clock the night before.
Well, beyond that, we still got a grand total of 0 leads.
So we start with square one.
Tompkins Square.
A man's wearing an orange cap.
I already told you. I didn't know him.
We're just trying to figure out who beat on this guy.
I thought you said he was hit by a car.
He did, but he got beat down first. You ever see a boxing match? A dude takes one too many hits, he walks out of the ring, and 2 days later he dies.
Is that what happened to him?
Eddie shrugs.
I'm sorry, I don't know anything.
The man starts to walk away, but Eddie stops him.
But I can make a guess.
See, all you had to do was concentrate.
Yeah, I seen, what'd you say his name was?
Alan.
Yeah, I seen this Alan guy bumming spare chains outside a bodega on Avenue A.
And?
Really pissed the owner off.
And how do you know that?
Because I saw the dude run him off with a baseball bat. Threatened to bash his brains in.
Lenny glances at Eddie. Sanjit Market.
Ever since this clinic opened, this block has been crawling with all whack jobs.
Well, we're interested in the whack job that you threatened with a baseball bat. Skinny white kid?
Why, did he complain? I never touched him, huh? Just waved around a little. Told him to get lost.
Is it possible he didn't get the message and came back?
Yeah. Tell you what, just for fun, why don't you tell us where you spend your Thursday nights?
Thursday night? Right here. All night, every night. Ask anyone.
We will. Meanwhile, just keep that baseball bat in the dugout.
Huh? The detectives leave.
All right, so I'm Alan Fisher. Schizophrenic, homeless, wandering the streets.
Yeah, persona non grata at the local bodega.
Where would I go?
I might get a warmer reception at my friendly neighborhood clinic.
With a doctor at the clinic.
Alan was one of those guys. Loving family, plenty of money, smart, good education. All the support in the world. How'd he end up on the street? Schizophrenia does not discriminate.
You come here a lot?
Yeah, time to time. He worked like hell to get him back on his medication. When he did, he felt so much better, he'd think he didn't need them anymore. See, that's the catch-22, modern meds. They work so well, patients stop taking them.
On the night of November 13th, was he here?
The detectives watch as the doctor looks through a file.
Yeah, stopped in around 6 just as I was getting ready to leave. Hit me up for a couple of bucks for food. I did my usual song and dance, tried to get him back on his regimen. Fat chance.
You know where he went after here?
Yeah, Gerald came by. They went off together, probably a liquor store.
And where can we find him?
Gerald? He lives with a couple of other homeless guys over in Stuyvesant Town. 15th and 1st.
Yeah, I know Fish. That's what we call him. Fish. I do, anyway. He got that fisheye look. Me, I got the thousand-yard stare. What you got?
We got a dead friend of yours, Gerald.
Huh?
Fish.
Fish died?
Somebody killed him.
Killed
him?
Somebody killed Fish.
Yeah, and you were the last person seen with him. Dr. Emmerich said he saw y'all leaving the clinic together.
Yeah, I remember that. We bought us a Mickey, went to the park, and passed it around.
Yeah, right after that, he got his head bashed in.
Oh, I know. I saw it go down.
You saw what happened?
Guy comes up to Fish. They trade words, start wrestling around, arguing about something. Next thing you know, they duking it out. Guy gets Fish down, bashing his head into the sidewalk.
You ain't trying to stop it?
Are you crazy? Besides, cops broke it up.
Does this other guy have a name?
I'm sure his mom would give him one, but I'd be damned if I know.
Gerald laughs, but Eddie stares at him.
Another homeless guy. I've seen him around. Big white guy.
Lenny nods, later with two officers.
When we got there, one guy had the other guy in a headlock.
Broke it up, asked who started it. They pointed fingers at each other.
You didn't do anything?
We got a call on a domestic. Guy using his girlfriend for a punching bag. What are we supposed to do? Tell him flag on the play while we process a couple of scales through the system? God forbid the girl gets hurt. We're dealing with these lice heads.
Come on, you know what it's like. Triage. Taxpayers first, so suits.
And only taxpayers get a ride to the ER? Those guys. Not my call. Never get the stink out.
They weren't hurt. No harm, no foul.
Actually, one of them was. He died later that night. A tall white kid.
No kidding?
What'd the other guy look like?
None the worse for wear.
A description, genius.
Oh, 6 feet, 6'2", old raincoat, orange wool cap.
We didn't take any names.
Lucky for you, I think we've met the guy.
The officer rolls her eyes. Men are standing in a lineup.
Now just take your time, Gerald.
What if he gets off? You know, gets out, comes after me.
Don't worry, he can't see you. That's one-way glass.
Gerald knocks on the glass.
Neat.
Come on, Gerald, focus.
That guy. 5. Number 5.
It's the man who is wearing the orange cap. Later.
Sorry, Max. I got bad news and worse news. A witness identifies you as the one who introduced Alan Fisher's face to the sidewalk.
And two cops picked you out as the one who'd been fighting with him.
Now, I know that math's probably not your strong suit, but even you can see how this adds up against you.
Only question is, which story is the judge going to hear, our version or yours?
Now, our version is that you attacked some poor defenseless kid who was a little touched in the head.
Shut up! Shut up! Let me think.
Max rings the orange cap.
You don't get it. You don't get it. You just don't get it.
Why don't you explain it to us, Max? Tell us why you killed this kid.
I can't explain it to you.
Why?
Because you don't know what it's like out there. All right? You don't get it. You think that you do, but you don't.
What I don't get is why you killed some poor guy who's just as down on his luck as you are.
He wasn't like me. He was a selfish bastard. He wouldn't share. Wouldn't share. All I wanted was a piece, just one little piece, and I asked him nice.
Piece of what, Max?
An orange. One little crappy orange.
You have to appreciate the irony. One defendant hits a man with her car, while another defendant hits the same man with his fists. Defendant number one gets off with the help of a blue chip mouthpiece, while defendant number two
gets the assistance of the director of the Urban Justice Center, which beats a funding challenged public defender any day.
Agreed. But it still begs the question how there can possibly be equal justice when defendants aren't treated equally.
Carrie Salter didn't kill Alan Fisher. Your client did.
Have you ever gone for months without a shower? Scrounge for dinner in a garbage can or beg for change on the street?
Life on the street is tough. So that gives your client the right to commit murder?
No, his fundamental right to survive does.
Well, thankfully, the law says otherwise.
Oh, did they change it? I haven't been keeping up with my reading. Is the necessity defense still on the books?
Not when the necessity is an orange.
So you say. Let's see what a judge says.
In a judge's chambers.
It's black letter law. To make out a necessity defense, the defendant has to be able to show that the need outweighed the wrong.
Which it does if you're homeless and you do whatever you have to do to survive in their world.
So it's survival of the fittest.
Go ahead, scoff. It only illustrates how ignorant all of you are.
Fortunately, we have laws to prevent society from descending into Darwinian anarchy.
Except we've evicted the homeless from society. We've made them outcasts. We look at them as less than human. We shun them from society. Then turn around and hold them accountable to society's laws, not the laws they have to live by.
Your Honor.
Don't judge a man until you've walked a mile in his shoes, Mr. McCoy. I don't see any problem with letting the jury take a little stroll.
Outside with Arthur.
She was basically arguing that as a matter of law, the homeless are less than human.
Fido takes a bite out of Joe Citizen and he gets put down. Fido bites another dog. That's just life in the urban jungle.
Well, let's face it. We all say the right things, but at the end of the day, we see them as scary, smelly, subhuman people we'd rather not deal with.
That's exactly the guilt Gardner is leveraging.
Well, don't let her. Plead this out.
When I've got a confession and two witnesses?
And a defense attorney turning the courtroom into a soapbox. For the money we'll end up spending on this trial, we'll be able to build our own soup kitchen.
But we won't, will we?
Arthur shakes his head. Supreme Court Trial, Part 63. The judge looks up at the defense lawyer.
Ms. Gardner, where's your client?
On his way, Your Honor.
An unshaven and disheveled Max is led into the courtroom.
Jack.
Jack sees Max and stands.
Sidebar, Your Honor.
Ms. Gardner and Jack step to the judge's bench.
What is this? The defendant is dressed like...
A homeless person, imagine that.
His appearance violates basic standards of courtroom decorum.
Which aren't codified anywhere in the CPL. The defendant can dress for court any way that he wants.
You mean how his attorney wants. This is a transparent ploy to get the jury to see him as homeless first and as a human being second.
Actually, it's about letting the jury see him as he truly is.
Either way, I'm not inclined to order a wardrobe change. Now step back and let's get on with this.
Jack clenches his jaw. Later, one of the officers is on the stand.
You say the defendant was banging the victim's head against the sidewalk?
That's right.
Why didn't you arrest him?
Wasn't clear who started it. We just sent the parties on their way. But I suppose in hindsight, maybe we should have picked the defendant up.
What about medical attention?
Why didn't you take Mr. Fisher to the emergency room?
I asked him if he wanted to go. He said hospitals are where they brainwash you. Besides, he looked okay.
Chad glances back at the jury, then returns to his seat. Miss Gardner stands.
Is that your usual practice? No arrests, no trip to the hospital, so long as everyone looks okay?
I don't have a usual practice. It's case by case. I use my judgment.
Then let's chat about your judgment.
She opens a file.
The past year, you've handled domestic disturbances, bar fights, traffic disputes. And in many cases, you've made arrests and or requested medical attention for the parties involved.
If counsel could ask a question.
My question. What made those cases different from this one?
The officer shrugs.
I'll give you a hint. The parties weren't homeless.
I don't treat them any different.
Really? Because it seems the only time you do arrest a homeless man or woman is for vagrancy, public intoxication, or when they bother a citizen. But as long as they're just beating up on one another.
I didn't think an arrest was warranted in this case. Didn't matter if they were homeless or not.
Homeless. Is that what you call them?
What else should I call them?
It's just when you were speaking to Detectives Briscoe and Green, you used other terms.
That was just... We use a lot of slang on the street. It doesn't mean anything.
Then you won't mind telling us what those slang terms are.
Jury members watch him intently.
One of them was Skells. What was the other?
Lice heads.
Max shifts in his seat.
And to think you're a duly sworn representative of the law.
She glares at the officer, then returns to her seat. Soon after, Gerald is on the stand dressed in a suit.
They were pushing and shoving. First, Fish gave as good as he got. But when he got him by the neck and threw him on the ground, it was game over.
Game over?
Game over. He was bashing his head into the sidewalk.
And Mr. Fisher couldn't fight back?
Gerald points to Max.
That guy was too big.
Which makes me wonder why he started yelling at Mr. Edgar's in the first place.
He couldn't help it. It was the way his brain worked. See, Fish would talk tough and such, but he wouldn't hurt nobody.
In your opinion, did Mr. Fisher pose any type of threat to the defendant?
Hardly. Worst Fish could do to anybody was spit at him a little.
Jack raises his eyebrows, then returns to his seat.
So if the fight was so one-sided, why didn't you try to stop it?
Two guys in a beef, you don't get up in the middle of it. You stand back and watch, just the way it is.
In your world.
Right.
She nods.
Then let's talk a little bit about your world. Have you ever been attacked on the street?
When I was a newbie. That's when you're new to the street. Guys come by, beat me with a pipe, take my stuff.
And when did that stop?
When I fall back. See, when you hit back, they look for somebody else who won't.
You look nice today. Do you dress like that on the street?
No.
New coat, new tie. Courtesy of Mr. McCoy?
Yeah.
Where'd you sleep last night?
At the Clinton Hotel.
Where do you usually sleep?
Heat and vent.
You have a shower this morning?
Yeah. It felt good.
I bet. Before that, when was the last time you had a shower?
Don't remember.
Must be nice. Living in a hotel, not on the street.
It was heaven.
So when you're living on the street, not in a hotel, what do you do when you have to go to the bathroom?
Wherever I can. Sometimes behind a car, in a doorway, in the park.
Like a dog.
Your Honor.
Look behind you, Miss Gardner. There's the line.
My apologies. And I apologize to you, sir. I'm sorry if I embarrassed you.
I ain't embarrassed. Living on the street, I've done a lot of things I never thought I'd do.
He nods, and Miss Gardner nods in return.
Is this mess still on your docket?
Because Gardner thinks she can get him off and wants to make a statement
doing so.
And you don't think she has a point?
That the homeless are animals and don't have to follow the same rules we do.
Well, they don't live the same lives we live. We've turned our backs on them.
I think that's overstating things a touch. I mean, there are shelters and soup kitchens.
And all these so-called solutions just hide the problem instead of solving it. Nobody wants a shelter in their neighborhood.
When's the last time you picked up a ladle at a soup kitchen?
Every Thanksgiving, as a matter of fact.
One day a year. you and all the other limousine liberals so you can look at yourself in the mirror. I mean, the sad fact is a lot of these people aren't going to get any better, no matter how much time and money we throw at the problem. You might as well try sweeping sand off the beach.
Careful, Arthur. You'll make Gardner's case for her.
She shouldn't have a case at all. Make a deal.
Later outside.
Perhaps you haven't been paying attention, but this case isn't just about Max Edgars. It's about every homeless man, woman, and child in this city.
Depicting your client as an animal, locked in this savage dog-eat-dog daily struggle for existence, this is how you advocate for the homeless?
I never once said homeless people were animals. I said society treats them like animals, forces them to live like animals.
They still have choice, free will.
Oh, do they? After we cast them into the outer darkness, relegate them to a world that's more Lord of the Flies than the civilized one we live in.
Believe me, I'm not denying any of man's darker instincts, which is why...
We have laws, I know. Brings us right back to where we started, doesn't it? The homeless, shunned from the very society that makes those laws. People need to realize we are all just two steps away from becoming Max Edgars.
She leaves. Later, Max is shaking as he testifies.
I used to work construction. High steel. I got hurt on the job and I blew through all my savings. And by the time I was back on my feet again, I was broke, behind on the mortgage. And eventually I lost my house, my family.
Then where did you live?
For a little while, in my car. But then I sold it to eat. Then I started living in doorways. ATM vestibules were the best. And then the mayor started cracking down.
So where did you go?
For a few months, I lived in this empty subway tunnel. There were a lot of other homeless there, and rats. If you didn't wear gloves, they would nibble on your fingers while you slept.
Sounds awful.
You got all these people living in their own filth. You go in there, the stench would knock you back like 3 feet.
And you couldn't go to a shelter.
They're not safe. A lot of people, crazies and junkies looking to steal your stuff or do worse.
Did that happen to you, people steal your things?
Yeah, I've been mugged. I lost count how many times. One time these two guys rolled me from my shoes and gave me smileys all over my body. That's when they hit you with a chain and a padlock and the lock leaves a bruise like a smiley face.
Miss Gardner steps away.
I want to turn your attention to the night of your altercation with Mr. Fisher.
He was crazy. I just asked for a piece of his orange, and he just started screaming at me. And I told him to back off, and he pushed me, and he kept putting his hands on me. He was a lunatic.
So why didn't you just walk away?
I couldn't. Word got out that I'd backed off, I would be fair game.
Fair game for who?
Anybody. That's how it works. If you're vulnerable, if you're weak, you're a target. And I wasn't going to be a target ever again.
She nods. As she takes her seat, Jack stands.
So... you admit assaulting another man because he refused to share his orange.
It's not that simple.
The law of the jungle.
That's right.
And your lawyer suggested that you live like an animal in that jungle.
Yeah, well, maybe she's right.
And what are we doing here? We don't put animals on trial, Mr. Edgars. We put them down.
Fine. Put me down. You'll be doing me a favor.
Tired of living in the street, are you?
You think I chose this for my life?
I think you have more choices than Alan Fisher did, don't you? He was held hostage to his own delusions. But you could control yourself. You could have looked for a job.
I had a job, I told you.
And a house?
Yeah.
And a car?
That's right.
Friends! Family, possessions.
And I lost them. I lost it all. You don't know what that feels like.
to be a failure. To go to bed on a piece of wet cardboard every friggin' night wondering, how did this happen to me? I didn't want this. I didn't choose this life. This is something that happened to me, and it's like this thing in my chest that's killing me.
Max pounds his chest with his fist.
Gets me right here.
He lowers his head slowly as he cries. Jack stares at him.
Sounds human to me, Mr. Edgerson.
Jack glances at the jury, then returns to his seat. Supreme Court Trial, Part 63.
Most of us woke up this morning, punched the snooze button of our clock radios, before eventually willing ourselves out of our nice warm beds and stumbling into the kitchen for an English muffin and a hot cup of coffee. But others, people who most of us will never know, woke up in a subway tunnel, surrounded by rats and human excrement. We all pay lip service. We all say the right things about the homeless, as long as we don't have to get too close to them. We blame them for their own misfortune and say we cannot understand why they live the way they do. We can't comprehend their existence. We can't possibly ever know the fear and desperation that drove Max Edgers to kill Alan Fisher that night. We can't. So we should all go home tonight. Crawl back into our nice warm beds. And thank our lucky stars. We don't have to.
Jury members stare at her solemnly. One juror has tears in her eyes. Jack stands and shoves his hands into his pants pockets.
The law exists to protect as well as to punish. So, if you say that society's laws don't apply to defendants like Max Edgers, you're also saying that society's justice doesn't apply to victims like Alan Fisher. If that's your verdict, then society truly has turned its back on these people. They have no food, no shelter, no money. Don't deny them justice as well.
Jack looks at several members of the jury, then goes back to his seat. Later, the jury sits.
Jury foreman, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. On the sole count of the indictment, manslaughter in the first degree, we find the defendant guilty.
Gina Fisher leans her head back and closes her eyes. Gardner talks to Max. As Serena watches, he nods, then is led away. Miss Gardner scowls sourly at Jack, then leaves. Later, Jack and Serena walk outside.
12 years in Austining.
At least they'll have plenty of food and shelter.
Careful, Jack. That almost sounded like sympathy.
Don't get me wrong. He killed a man for an orange. He deserves to be in prison.
But?
We just moved him from one jungle to another.